Hi there and welcome. This is Amanda, the founder of Astrology Hub, and you're listening to our Week Ahead Snapshot with world-class astrologer, historian, and author of The Cosmic Calendar, Christopher Renstrom. This show is designed to give you a quick overview of the week ahead, enabling you the gift of choice in how you navigate and weave these energies into your daily life. Enjoy.
This podcast episode is sponsored by Astrology Hubs Academy. Wherever you are on your astrology journey, we have a class that will help you get to the next level.
Hello, my name is Christopher Renstrom, and this week I want to talk to you about Pluto retrograding back down into the zodiac sign of Capricorn on June 11th for a 6.5 month stay. Now I can hear a number of you out there groaning like, Pluto back in Capricorn. Well, I don't know if now's a good time to tell you or not, but this isn't the last time that Pluto will be retrograding back down into Capricorn. It retrogrades back down into Capricorn again in the year 2024 before it finally leaves the sign in 2025. So, what are we to make of this retrograde, of this return, of this Pluto's share-like farewell tour, refusing to leave the zodiac sign of Capricorn and move on properly to the zodiac sign of Aquarius? Pluto, as you know, is the planet of rebirth and transformation in astrology. Actually, Pluto was named after the Greek god of the dead, Hades, and his Roman counterpart, which was Pluto. So Pluto has always represented death in an astrological chart. It can be the death of an idea, the death of a lifestyle, a physical death, of course, but also the death of a romance or of a relationship. So whenever Pluto casts its shadow by transit, by going through a section of your chart, it has a tendency to make everyone feel uneasy, like, is that planet looking at me, or am I next, or am I going to lose something? So obviously, everyone's going to feel a bit anxious and a bit nervous when Pluto is transiting someplace in their astrological chart. Now, Pluto entered the zodiac sign of Capricorn in 2008. It retrograded briefly back down into the sign of Sagittarius before entering Capricorn for certain in the year 2009. So we've had this feeling of Pluto being betwixt and between two signs before. And if you remember that 2008 and 2009 period, it wasn't particularly easy for a number of us. And so Pluto is again, once more, taking its time, leaving one zodiac sign and entering into the next. Now, some people are going to feel like this is just prolonging the agony of the planet's transit, that why wouldn't it just leave? Why wouldn't it just move on? Why do you have to keep returning, Pluto? All right, but there's more going on to Pluto than that. Actually, Pluto has a lot to give of benefits if you're willing to enter into what I call the Plutonian curriculum. Pluto is the planet, as I've said before, of ordeals and the transformations that arise from them. The idea being that you have to go through the ordeal. In other words, you have to descend down into the underworld of life, the underworld of yourself, the underworld of a situation. You have to descend down into the underworld in order to be transformed or in order to be born again. And this is where Pluto gets its sort of evolutionary connotations. The idea that when you undergo a Plutonian passage, either you have Pluto very powerful in your chart or Pluto is transiting your chart right now, currently, it's going to trigger this descent down into the underworld with the idea that you will rise again and perhaps be a better person for it. That's the idea. Does that always happen? No, not always, but that's because Pluto, like other planets in astrology, like Mars, for instance, or Saturn, have to describe the dark side of life, the dark side of nature itself, and that nature itself isn't always cooperative with our wishes, our aspirations, and nature itself is not always kind. Bad things happen to good people just as much as bad things happen to bad people. And these are the ideas that are wrapped up in planets like Mars and Saturn and Pluto specifically. And it's, again, these are ideas are the ones that make us all feel a bit uncomfortable with good reason. Nobody wants to go through pain. Nobody wants to go through agony. And nobody wants to suffer a loss. It's a horrible experience. It's a hard to explain experience. It's an isolating experience. If you've gone through a horrible, painful situation or loss or grief, you know how it isolates you from the land of the living. You can't really go back to the person you were before. You can't really talk to loved ones and friends because they just don't get it. And in fact, the people whom you might want to talk to, the people whom you might want to seek out, are the people who have gone through an experience of loss or grief, people who get it. And that is a kind of Pluto brotherhood, for lack of a better way of putting it. When I think of Pluto, when I think of the planets, I like to think of them mythologically. I like to think of them really as having these mythological personalities and these stories that they want to impart. And I even try to imagine what it's like to be that planet. When I think of Pluto, named after Hades, the Lord of the Dead in Greek mythology, Hades, along with his brothers Poseidon and Zeus, cast lots as to who's going to govern certain realms that are connected to the world. Zeus wins the sky, Poseidon wins the ocean, and Hades wins the underworld, which is the most remote and the most forbidden of all the realms. And I think of Hades moving around the underworld, perhaps surveying the different kingdoms that he governs. There's the Elysian Fields, there's the Tartarus, there's the River Styx. There's quite a landscape down there in the underworld, and it's easy to get lost. And I think of Hades sort of walking through, strolling through, surveying his underworld. And I think of him looking at life up through the roots of life, because the underworld is that realm beneath the roots of trees. And I think of him as being connected to roots, looking up through the roots, perhaps seeing past them into the tree trunks that look on the surface world. He has a regular flow of people who are passing away and into his kingdom, and he sees them as they plead their cases to him, and he assigns them to different judgeships and things like this. So there's a wonderful kind of knowingness to Pluto that isn't really shared with his brother gods, Poseidon and Zeus, or Neptune and Jupiter, as we would think of them in astrology. There's a knowledge of the past, and there's a knowledge of the future, and there's a knowledge of people's essential being. And these are things that I see as being very much caught up or bound up in the character of Hades. And so I kind of always imagine Hades, and I don't quite imagine. I mean, the way that he's portrayed in stories pretty much communicates it quite clearly. There's a kind of wryness to Hades. There's a kind of sardonic quality to Hades. Hades doesn't get mad at people. Hades doesn't curse people. Hades doesn't get, you know, out of sorts. You know, he's not like the storm gods, Neptune and Jupiter. He doesn't really give in to his passions. In fact, he's often portrayed as being a bit dispassionate. So I'm not exactly ready to put Hades in a smoking jacket, although it would be rather appropriate attire. But I kind of see him strolling along and looking at his realm with this kind of knowing quality. People fear him. People dread him. People don't want to go near him. And that's okay, because Hades knows that he'll meet you at some point in your life or your passage from this life to the next. And he carries with him a knowledge of that. And interestingly enough, when you see his exchanges, like for instance with Orpheus, there's nothing condescending about Hades, and he isn't particularly hard. A lot of times people project that onto him, but there isn't this fury. There isn't this ferocity to him. There's a coolness that you would expect from someone who rules over the realm of shadows. So, like I said, most people avoid the underworld. I mean, like in Greek mythology, practically everyone, if they can, avoids the underworld. And they avoid that. And that continues to this day. Most of us aren't in a particularly big hurry to meet our death. There are those of us who may find death as a release from physical pain or from psychic pain or anguish. And that's a different sort of encounter. It's really almost like a blessing or a release, which death can be. But most of us, for the most part, aren't in a big hurry to go and meet death. However, that wasn't the case with other characters in Greek mythology. There were ones who chose to descend into the underworld and to go on this journey. And it's from their stories that we kind of can piece together the character of Pluto and how Pluto acts in the chart. Like I said, there are two very well-known characters who descend into the underworld pretty much against their will. I mean, Persephone is abducted. She's taken down into the underworld and made Pluto's wife. And then there's Orpheus, who loses his fiancée on the day of their wedding. She's bitten by a poisonous snake. And he journeys down into the underworld out of sorrow and longing to retrieve his lost bride. But there are other people who go down to the underworld. And it's not always so solemn, and it's not always so serious. For instance, there is Theseus, who you might remember from the adventures of slaying the Minotaur. He goes to Crete, and he navigates the labyrinth with the aid of Ariadne's thread, and he slays the Minotaur, who is half bull and half human, who is eating sacrificed youths sent there as an exchange from Thebes. But Theseus actually journeys to the underworld at the request of his friend Pirithous. Pirithous is a king of a neighboring kingdom to Thebes, and Theseus and Pirithous are kind of bros, okay? They're like best buddies. They're like, bro, how's it going? Oh, dude. Okay, so they go on adventures together and have a good old time. So Pirithous helps Theseus to abduct Helen of Troy. Theseus happens to be looking at Helen of Troy when she's like an 8-year-old girl, and she's very beautiful. And he's like, I want to make her my wife. So he goes and abducts her. So Helen, unfortunately, her beauty was causing trouble long before the Trojan War. And this particular abduction takes place when Helen is about 8, maybe 9. And so her brothers, Castor and Pollux, Dioscuri, that's how they are referred to, Zeus's boys, the Dioscuri, or Castor and Pollux, the twins, come and they rescue Helen, and they're like, Theseus, leave her alone, and she is a princess of Troy, and you try this again, and we're just going to knock your block off. Okay, so Theseus is like, cool, okay, fine. Pirithous is like, you know who I want to bed and wed? And Theseus is like, who? And Pirithous says, Persephone. And Theseus is like, the queen of the dead? Dude, why? You know, and Pirithous says, because she's so beautiful, and she was obviously taken there against her will. Don't you understand, Theseus? She was taken there against her will, and she's a prisoner of the underworld, and we're going to go down and rescue her, which is what heroes do. We're going to go down and rescue her, and I will make her my wife. And Theseus is like, okay, let's do it. Okay, so they go and they journey down to the underworld, and they fight different demons and monsters and things like that along the way. They're heroes, so they get through it okay. And they go on down to the underworld, and they appear before Pluto and Persephone. And Pirithous is like, Persephone, I'm here to rescue you. And she's like, you're here to what? And he's like, I'm here to rescue you. You were taken down here. You were abducted unfairly by this Pluto person, this king of the dead. And I'm here to take you back up to the upper world and make you my wife. How does that sound? And she's like, not great. And I'm kind of like, okay here, and you can leave now. And he's like, I will not leave. I will not leave. And Pluto says to Pirithous, oh, you won't leave. And he's like, I refuse to leave until Persephone agrees to come upstairs and you give up your hold on her. And she comes upstairs to the surface world and marries a real man and belongs in the world where she should be. And Pluto's like, well, that could be a very long wait. And Pirithous is like, I don't care. And he's like, well, why don't you and your friend Theseus have a seat here on these two stones, and we'll have a wait, and we'll see if my wife changes her mind. You know, and Pirithous is like, fine. And he sits down on a stone, and Theseus is like, okay. And he sits down on the stone too. And they wait. They wait for an hour. They wait for 2 hours. It's hard to tell how much time is actually really going past you when you're down in the underworld. And so finally, you know, Theseus is like, let's get up and get something to drink. And he tries to get up, and he can't move. He's stuck to his seat on the stones. And Pirithous is also like stuck to his seat on the stones. And they're like, well, what do we do? We can't get up. And so they sit there, all right, in the underworld while 1 year passes, 2 years pass, 3 years pass, 4 years pass. And this is something that I want to make a quick note of. When you're going through a Pluto transit, or if you have Pluto next to your sun and your moon, you're used to time passing, a lot of time passing before something happens. Okay, so when you're down in the underworld, or when you're down in this Plutonian energy, time moves quite slowly. A lot of time can pass. And this is something that's associated with people who also have Pluto very powerfully or strong in their charts. There's a Saturnian flavor to it, which makes a lot of sense because Saturn is also the planet of time. And if you have Saturn very strong in your chart, you learn to be patient. You learn to take your time with things. But when Pluto was discovered in the year 1930, it inherited a lot of the characteristics of Saturn. And one of those characteristics is that time moves in the underworld very, very differently than it moves in the surface world. And so basically, after about four plus years, they hear a ruckus, and a dog barking, actually a three-headed dog barking, and it's Hercules, obviously. And Hercules has journeyed down to the underworld to retrieve the three-headed hellhound Cerberus, who is the dog that guards the gates of hell. And so Hercules is doing these 12 labors. And his last and final labor is to go down to the underworld and to retrieve Cerberus. So Hercules rustles Cerberus right there in front of Theseus and Pirithous, who are both like, yeah, get him, Hercules, get him, And Hercules is like, Theseus, is that you? And the dog like, he's like holding down the three heads. He's like, Theseus, is that you? And he's like, yeah, it is. And he's like, where have you been? Stuck here in the underworld. He's like, really? You've been here a long time. How long have we been here? Oh, I think about 4+ years. And he's like, wow, that's a long time. I got to get back upstairs. And Hercules is like, give me a quick minute. So he basically bests Cerberus and comes over to, wipes himself and comes on over to Theseus and Pirithous. And he's like, okay, let's go. And they're like, we can't. We're stuck to these rocks. And so Hercules is like, well, let's start with you. And he takes Pirithous and he lifts him up. But at that point, the earth begins to shake and there's a groan. And Pirithous is like, and Hercules is like, what's up? And he's like, I can't leave. I'm stuck to the stone. And Hercules is like, wow, that's too bad. And he turns to Theseus and is like, well, let's try you. And Theseus is like, yeah, bud, And so Hercules lifts Theseus up, and you hear this tremendous rip, like rip, and Theseus is like, oh, and Hercules is like, what is it? And Theseus, turns to him, and by the way, Hercules has pulled Theseus off the rock, and so Theseus is free, but Theseus is like, oh, damn. And Hercules is like, what's up? And he turns around and he's like, my buttocks, they're stuck to the rock. And indeed, where Theseus once sat stuck to a rock for 4.5 years, his buttocks stayed quivering still from where they had been ripped off of Theseus's behind. And so it's decided that basically Hercules cannot rescue Pirithous, but he can rescue Theseus. So Pirithous remains there forever in Hades. After all, he was the one who insulted Persephone and wanted to abduct her. So he remains there in Hades, neither dead nor alive. And Theseus is the one who can return to the surface world. but he gets a nickname as a result of this little adventure down into the underworld. His nickname is, let's see my notes, Hypolispos. So Theseus gets a nickname, Hypolispos, which means with hinder parts rubbed smooth. All right, so the nickname Hypolispos means with hinder parts rubbed smooth. It basically means he's flat-assed. And as a result of this misadventure where he leaves his buttocks in hell forever, all of Theseus's descendants were said to have inherited that particular trait, the trait of being flat-assed. So it was King Eurystheus who had ordered Hercules to descend down into the underworld to fetch Cerberus. And so this is Hercules' 12th and final labor. After this, he's free of his obligation to King Eurystheus. So he's in a hurry to get back upstairs. He's carrying Cerberus, the three-headed dog, is like, you know, the entire way. And behind him is Theseus, the flat-assed one, having left his quivering buttocks in the realm of Hades down below. And they return to King Eurystheus. And Cerberus immediately, you know, lunges at King Eurystheus, who is completely terrified and hides in a jug and yells from inside this jug, take him away, take him away, you know, orders him away and says, Hercules, you're free. So, and Hercules is indeed free of his labors. So he has returned from the underworld, and his is one of the few returns that's actually quite triumphant, and it's quite victorious, although Hercules, of course, takes Cerberus back and leads him on down and says, later, pooch, and he, you know, and he goes on down to Hades again. And so this is the idea that we get that you can actually go down and come back up, all right? And that there are people who actually can come up freed or liberated from something that had dominated their lives, freed or liberated from an ordeal. And in the case of Hercules, he is freed from his 12 labors of Hercules, which has been a penance that he had to serve to King Eurystheus because in a fit of insane rage, Hercules had killed his own wife and children. So this idea of doing penance is very much connected to Pluto. Pluto, we're familiar with being the realm of the dead. You know, you either go to the field, the Elysian fields or the belching, gaping pits of Tartarus. The Elysian fields are obviously where those who are blessed are blessed for all of life. It later becomes heaven. And Tartarus later becomes hell, where those who have been evil and sinful are punished throughout all of time. But this other idea that we get from returning from a Pluto transit or journey down into the underworld is a release from a debt, from having done penance, which is the true story of the 12 labors of Hercules. So it's only fitting that the last labor be down to the realm of Pluto and that what Hercules wins is his freedom because he has shown proper penitence. He has shown proper regret and grief for having killed his wife and children in an insane rage. So there are two other people who voluntarily journey down into the realm of Pluto, which we also get our information about Pluto from. There is Odysseus from the Odyssey, who is taking 10 years to get home by ship. And Odysseus is told by Circe, it's interesting, Odysseus is told by Circe, you need to go down to the underworld to find your way back home. Odysseus is having a hell of a time trying to navigate his way back home from Troy to Ithaca. And he has angered Poseidon, who is the brother of Pluto. And Poseidon keeps blowing him off course or shipwrecking him or sending monsters and all these sorts of things. What should really be a few days' trip has taken 10 years. And Odysseus has lost all of his men or many of his men, and it's just been this ordeal. And so Circe, who's a sorceress who fell in love with him, says, you need to travel to the Isles of the Dead. And she says to him, and it's in the Odyssey, you need to travel to the Sunset Isles of Persephone. Okay, so she doesn't call the realm of the dead Hades or Pluto. She calls them the Sunset Isles of Persephone, the Isles of Persephone, the realm of the dead. So here, Persephone has really become the queen of the dead in this reference. And so in order to go back home, Odysseus has to travel down into the underworld to consult the departed prophet, seer Tiresias, who was famous for being able to see. He was a blind prophet, but he could see the truth. And this is another fascinating association with Pluto. Pluto, in certain paintings that I enjoy that were done in the Renaissance, post-Renaissance period, is often portrayed as blind, like the creatures that dwell in caves or underground. There's no need for sight. And so Pluto himself is often portrayed as blind, like he has empty sockets where his eyes would be. And this reflects his realm of shades, where he lives and he exists. And so Tiresias, who is the most famous of all the Greek seers, was famously blind. And so Odysseus must travel down to consult with him. And when you spoke to the dead, you had to bring blood. Okay, so you had to bring like a pig, and you would slaughter it, and you would pour the blood into a trough, and the spirits would come, because the dead in the underworld don't remember who they are. They have no recollection of who they are. If they see a living person, who you are, you know, but they're hungry, and they're hungry for blood. And in some ways, this is perhaps the origin of vampirism, but they don't stalk. They merely react to blood, and they drink of the blood. And when they drink of the blood, the departed spirits, like a sailor who sailed with Odysseus, recognizes Odysseus in a moment, you know, and actually tells Odysseus that he died unceremoniously somewhere and that his body needs to be buried. And this is a big thing in Greece, that bodies need to be buried. And so Tiresias comes and he drinks the blood and he recognizes Odysseus, and he tells Odysseus how to get home. So we not only have this coming back up from the underworld, but Pluto also carries the knowledge of how to get home, all right? And it's not just how to get back home, like directions that someone gives you on a street, but home and what you're going to find there, home and what it means to you now, returning to you, okay? Odysseus is the story of basically a lost soul, a shipwrecked sailor who's trying to find his way back to his kingdom. And Tiresias is the only one who has knowledge of how Odysseus can do this, and also warns Odysseus of the dangers that lay in store. So it's this descent into the underworld, it's this descent into Pluto, where we learn how to return to who we really are, to how to return to home, not to the past. It's not nostalgic, but the home that each of us carries within ourselves, okay? And so Pluto has this information, how to return to the real you, so that you are no longer a lost soul or even a sinning one. Okay, so these are interesting attributes that are connected to a planet that's connected to the Lord of the Dead, whom we see only as, you know, being at the end of our years, the border of our years, as they say in the Aeneid. I think he had reached the border of his years, meaning he'd reached the border of his years and passed away. But this is coming back from this shadowy realm, coming back from this Plutonian experience and re-embracing and rediscovering home. The other person who goes down into the underworld is Aeneas. Aeneas is the sole survivor of Troy. Well, he's not the sole survivor. He leads the sole survivors of Troy away from the burning city on a series of adventures that are Odysseus-like, but he ultimately becomes the founder of Rome. And so Aeneas is the founder of Rome, and his story of his adventures is about the settling of Rome, and all Roman citizens said that they were related to Aeneas, or at least Caesar was. But what's fascinating is that Odysseus descends into the underworld. His Plutonian experience is to lead him back to his home, to who he really is. And in Aeneas's story, he's told by his father to go find him in Hades. His father has departed, and he brings the blood and makes the sacrifice, and his father recognizes, and he can speak to him. But Aeneas's experience in Hades, in the underworld, is different. He's shown the future, okay? Aeneas is shown that from his bloodline will come the great Caesars, you know, will come the great Roman Empire. And so he's shown his future. And so what's remarkable about this is that there is an implied future incarnation, okay, that there is a future. And when you think of return and future incarnation, you can't help but be reminded of Pluto's association with past lives. Pluto is a planet that as the 20th century really unfolded, or basically after its discovery in 1930 is a more basic way of putting it, Pluto is a planet that came to be associated with past lives, with reincarnation. And if you're familiar with reincarnation, there's that dubious relationship to memory. You don't remember your past lives, or maybe you do remember your past lives, but you don't really know what to do with it. Or you meet someone that you feel this karmic connection to, and you're like, I must have known that person in a past life. Okay, so Pluto rules that. Whenever you have like Pluto-Venus transits, for instance, and you have these impossible love affairs, there's something karmic or charged or destined or fated about it. I've often had clients say, I'm convinced that we were together in a past life, and why doesn't this person remember, or why doesn't this person agree or understand? And you're in that position where you say, well, maybe this person doesn't share that same view of past lives, or perhaps some past lives are better left buried, or maybe it's a carryover thing, but there is something about having to leave that past life behind. Even if you're convinced that you're bound to someone through a past life, it's not this life. And so there's something about leaving that behind. Even if you resolve it, you're resolving it in the process of leaving it behind. So these Plutonian themes of journeying down to find your way back to home, find your way back to the soul, journeying down to see the future, this idea that we reincarnate. And of course, where does this idea of reincarnate come from? But agricultural societies. Agricultural societies were able to see that you grew plants, you grew your crops, you harvested them, you ate them. There was a bleak winter, and following the winter, there were seeds in which the crops that had been there before came back. And so that was basically seen as, well, reincarnation, that you die, you're buried, you're put into the earth, and then you come back. And so this round, this being bound to the wheel of reincarnation, and of course, Pluto rules over everything that's buried under the earth. It could be corpses, you know, bodies. It can be ruins. It can be precious metals, gold and silver and precious metals, which is why Pluto comes from the Roman word Pluton, which means wealth. We use it in our word plutocracy, which means the wealthy class. So Pluto was not just about inner riches, but actual riches that could be mined from the earth, but also seeds. Seeds were connected to the realm of Pluto. So the idea of being buried in the earth, which many civilizations, cultures still do today, in earlier prehistoric times, the body was placed in a fetal position when it was buried into the earth because it was being returned to the womb of the mother. And this idea of new life springing from it, that perhaps the soul returns and reincarnates, this is also very much associated to Pluto and how Pluto acts or behaves in a chart. So, you know, from the, frat boy adventures to abducting Persephone, where they basically get their just desserts and Theseus leaves his butt behind, to Hercules doing penance, finishing his 12 labors and penance for the crime of killing his wife and children in an insane rage, to Odysseus, who needs to find his way home back to the true Odysseus, to Aeneas, who needs to see the future and what is going to come from his seed, you know, what is going to come from his family line, but this glorious future empire of Rome. These are the things that Pluto is associated with. So it's not just, I mean, Pluto will always be ordeals and the transformations that arise from them, but they're not just horrible, awful, inexplicable, why did this happen to me things. And if they are, we are left as human beings with our imaginations and our spiritual life and our continual quest for life and living and meaning to make sense of the horrible things that happen and to hopefully, in some ways, benefit from it. So why is Pluto returning to Capricorn? What is the point? Well, it's physically returning to Capricorn because it's based on an orbit. Okay, it returns to Capricorn twice. All right, well, we got that out of the way. But what are we to make of this? What are we to draw from this? Sometimes, many times, oftentimes, when we've been through an ordeal, when we've been through something that's dreadful, sometimes it's just the act, you know, an event, which is an ordeal, but the recovery takes years. Sometimes there's no recovery. Sometimes we go to a place either psychically or physically, maybe it's a war zone, and we come back from it. Or maybe we battle an addiction and we go to rehab and we come back from it. Or maybe we're in prison and we reemerge from it into a world that has gone on, that has lived its life. And we feel estranged. We feel separate from it. We feel like we are not a part of this. And so do we go back down to the hell we know? And do we reject the heaven we don't? You know, or do we honor the process of rebirth? Do we honor the process of recovery, which is also bound to the ascent from the underworld that's part of Pluto's journey? Do we allow ourselves to come home again, to come to the surface again? And here, when we speak of rebirth, rebirth isn't like, you know, I'm someone new, you know, it's like, I'm a blonde and I used to be brunette. Okay, that's not the transformation we're talking about. We're talking about a rebirth, and a rebirth can be just as painful, just as difficult, and just as clumsy as a real birth can. You know, we have to become reacquainted with these hands and feet, these limbs, this body, this life we occupy. And it isn't always easy saying that that journey to the underworld is over, or that we've been truly released from it. You know, we may hear sounds, there may be conversations, a memory may be invoked that spooks us or triggers us again. We may think we're still that person we were before we made that Plutonian descent. And this is why Pluto returns to the sign before. This is what we can derive. This is what we can take as a meaning of that experience. Like I've said before, modern planets move slowly. And what I've come to really appreciate in their slow motion, they don't move slowly. They just take a long time to orbit the sun. But what I've come to appreciate in their slow motion is that they allow us time to acclimate to their energies. Their energies are larger than life. You know, they were called the transpersonal planets, in contrast to the personal planets. The ancient planets, Sun through Saturn, were the personal planets. They're the ones we could sort of personify. Whereas the modern planets were seen as being transpersonal, as being larger than life, as ruling realms. Uranus is the heavens, Neptune is the oceans, and Pluto is the underworld. And so these aren't personifications, these are realms. And so when we come back from this realm, the beauty that the blessing that a modern planet gives us, the blessing that Pluto gives us, is time to get used to it. Now, does Pluto reward those who brave its ordeals? Absolutely. I've seen this over and over and over again. It could be financially, or it could be psychically, or emotionally, or spiritually enriched. You know, if you can make that ascent. You know, some people are broken by the descent. Some people stay down there because they can't find their way, or it's too much. You know, the wheel fell off the wagon, the wagon's broken, and it is just too much. And then there are people who do return, but they don't really make the transition because they don't feel like they fit in the surface world anymore. They don't feel greeted by home. What was home has changed so dramatically. Too much time has passed. Who are these people? And then there are those who, bless them, you know, carry home within, carry the self within, who have worked with the Pluto transit in their own evolution and their own rebirth. And that's when, because Pluto comes back into Capricorn this coming year and the next, that's when we need to become reacquainted with who we are now. You know, we need to become reacquainted with the person who has not only survived, but come back. And this is the story of those of us who are fortunate enough to be enriched by the Plutonian experience of rebirth. This is when we can embrace who we are now. We're not the wounded child, the failed career person, the disappointed artist, the broken heart. We're not that anymore. You know, like, you know, when you go to a high school reunion or maybe a get together with family for the holidays, you almost feel like you're being put back into an old role. At the other side of this Pluto experience, and Pluto's coming back to check, to make sure, to remind you, you're not that broken heart anymore. You're not that wounded child anymore. You're you now. Okay, so Pluto's coming back to remind you of that, that you don't have to go back to that role doesn't make any sense anymore. You're who you are right now, the result of these experiences. And so this is what allows you to embrace your rebirth and to slough off the old skin of the used to be you. This is something that I want you to keep in mind as Pluto retrogrades back down into the astrological sign of Capricorn for the next 6.5 months.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.